First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. My name is Bill Simmons. We're a couple days away from Super Bowl 42 in Glendale, Arizona. So I'm still confused by this Glendale, Phoenix, Scottsdale thing. There's like seven different locations. I haven't gone down to Arizona yet. I'm actually going this weekend. Anyway, we're going to get to this week's show. And our first guest from footballoutsiders.com, also the author of the Pro Football Prospectus, which comes out every year. He's been coming on every week during the playoffs. He crunches numbers for us. He lets us know what's going on. Aaron Schatz, how are you feeling about this week's game?
Well, I'm feeling a little frustrated just because it's so hard to try to explain to people the gigantic difference between the performance of these two teams in the regular season, while at the same time trying to get across the idea that you really do think that it's, you know, admirable what the Giants have done over the last 3 weeks.
Yeah. Do you see any historical comparisons with them to teams like the 94 Chargers or one of the Elway Broncos teams that got blown out? Like these teams that catch fire basically the last 4 weeks.
Well, I'll tell you the comparisons that I would make. A lot of people are talking about the 2001 Patriots, but they forget that that team was the number two seed in the AFC.
Right.
The 2003 Panthers is one that I've been making now for 4 weeks. Because of the similarity with a quarterback who is, you know, inaccurate during the regular season, suddenly not throwing interceptions in the playoffs, team that's built around the pass rush, and a two-headed running game.
And they have one deep threat on each team.
And went huge in the playoffs, including playing well in the Super Bowl. One deep threat on each team, although one of them is tall and one of them is short, so they're not actually similar players. But the other comparison that I think is apt is the 1985 Patriots.
Oh.
The 1985 Patriots also had a quarterback who was inaccurate, who was a top draft pick. And Tony Eason threw 17 interceptions in the regular season that year, and none in the three playoff games. And of course, they were a wild card, and they beat, you know, their arch nemesis, the Miami Dolphins, much like the Giants beat the Cowboys. They went on to play one of the greatest teams of all time. And suddenly, Tony Eason's no interceptions for three games accuracy went out the window, and they got crushed. And the fact is that for people who want to use the 0-1 Patriots as sort of an example of what the Giants could do, you have to remember that the 85 Patriots are also an example of what the Giants can do.
I don't see the 0-1 Patriots thing at all.
I don't either.
Any comparison. And the other thing with that Patriots team is by week 9 with the Rams game, we knew that team was good. And, you know, they had – remember that game? They hung tough on a Sunday night, and I think after that game, even the Rams, even though the Pats were 5-5, the Rams were saying, "Wow, that team might make the Super Bowl."
Right.
I don't think anybody thought that about the Giants until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean that's why the 0-3 Panthers are such a better comparison, because that was a team that they won their division because it was a, you know, poor division that year. They won a couple of close games. They really were not as good as 11-5.
Right.
And then suddenly in the playoffs, they were like out of their minds. The 0-1 Patriots, it was sort of a gradual building of quality throughout the regular season and into the playoffs.
Yeah.
With the Giants this year and the Panthers in 0-3, and the Patriots in 85, for that matter, you had just like a sudden turning on of the switch. And by the way, that's why this team is also not comparable to, say, the 97 Broncos, the 2005 Steelers, the 2000 Ravens. I mean, by our numbers, the 97 Broncos were the best team in the league. And they got the wild card because it just so happened the second-best team in the league was also in their division.
Yeah.
And the 2000 Ravens were also one of the top two teams in the league, but it just so happened that the top two teams in the league were both in the same division. And the 05 Steelers were the third-best team in the league. They just happened to beat the top two on their way to the Super Bowl. So those teams are not really comparable to this Giants team the way like the 03 Panthers are, or the 79 Rams, or the 85 Patriots, or the 94 Chargers.
Make the case for the Giants somehow pulling off this game.
Well, if they continue to play at the level that they've played for the last 4 weeks, and they get some bounces, and the Patriots make a lot of mistakes, you know, Tom Brady has another three interception games or whatever, that they can win. Because the fact is that if they continue to play at the quality that they've played the last 4 weeks, and the Patriots continue to play the same quality they've played the last 4 weeks, the Patriots win. I mean, we've already seen that game. We saw that game in Week 17.
Right.
So in order for the Giants to win, they not only have to play at that continued high level, completely different from how they were the first 15 games of the season, but the Patriots have to have mistakes like they haven't really had in any game this year except for the Ravens game, and offensively in the Chargers game, although the defense stepped up in the Chargers game, and so they won it.
The only difference to me between the Week 17 Giants and this week's Giants, other than Eli, I'm a little more sold on their running game. I think they've kind of figured out how to mix and match those guys depending on the series and how the game is flowing. And that part worries me as a Patriots
fan. Yeah, I would be shocked if Ahmad Bradshaw does not break at least one big run.
Yeah.
Because while the Patriots' run defense is they were 15th in our ratings, overall, but in general, it's the front seven is good, but once you get past them, there have been some longer runs,
yep.
Which is actually the opposite of what the Patriots were for years. The Patriots allowed fewer double-digit runs than any defense in the league. It was ridiculous for year after year. It was very consistent, but this year they've allowed some of those longer runs, and so I think that you got to figure that Ahmad Bradshaw gets at least one of those, whether it's a close game or a blowout, either way. You know, he's going to have one of those even if the Giants are losing by 30 when he finally pulls it off.
Well, look at what happened 2 weeks ago. Every time Sproles got the ball, I was terrified. And thank God for North Turner not totally using Sproles like he could have. I just would have unleashed him on the Pats in the second half.
Yeah, but you know what? The fact is that players like that make big plays, but they also get stuffed an awful lot. Because when plays fail for players like that,
yeah,
they often result in lost yardage. That's why you had so many, you know, 5-yard lost passes to Devin Hester this year and stuff like that. I mean, you know, those players in space, if the space caves in on them, there's nothing for them to do.
But my only thing with the Chargers was how else were they scoring? Like, they needed big plays. That's why Michael Turner churning out 3-4 yards a run wasn't really going to get them anywhere.
Well, honestly, I mean, that's the way you have to go into every game with the Patriots. You have to go into every game with them thinking we want touchdowns, not field goals, and
right.
We want big plays because we can't just pound the rock and take time off the clock because we know as soon as they give them back the ball, they're probably going to score in some way, even if we keep them to a field goal. So you need to take chances that you wouldn't take if you were playing, I don't know, the Steelers.
Right.
Or the Jaguars.
So they need one big Plax play. They need one big Bradshaw play. They need one big special teams play. And then they need a big turnover.
And the big special teams play is really unlikely.
Yeah.
And in fact, to me, that's the biggest difference between this game and the last one. Without that Dominic Hickson touchdown return, it's a very different game. The Patriots are leading at halftime, probably. You know, you're not talking about a 10-point game that becomes 3 at the end. You're talking about a 17-point game that becomes 10 at the end.
Right.
And that touchdown return goes against everything those teams did the rest of the year, including the playoffs. The Giants have no other kickoff returns for touchdowns. The Patriots have not allowed any other kickoff returns for touchdowns. The Patriots have the better kickoff coverage, and they have the better kickoff guy by more than 3 yards per kickoff. And when you add in the thin Arizona air to a long Gostkowski kickoff, that becomes a touchback. A long Tynes kickoff just becomes a slightly longer Tynes kickoff that you can still return.
I also, you know, I worry about with the Giants just the third quarter of that game in Week 17. Once the Pats said, all right, fine, we'll start blitzing. And then it was, I think, late in the third quarter, and that was it for Eli. He basically wasn't the same guy. I don't think they waited as long to drop the hammer on Eli this time around.
No, I would bet you're right. I mean, you think about people talk about the Patriots making halftime adjustments. Well, they don't have to this time because they've, you know, they've sort of already made those adjustments at halftime in the first game. And, you know, based on our game charters marking the number of pass rushers per play, you're absolutely right. Eli struggles if you big blitz him with 6 guys.
Yeah.
It was a big part of Minnesota's strategy when Minnesota walloped the Giants 44-17. The Patriots did it only once in the first half of the first game. They did it six times in the second half. And those six times, you had three incompletes, a sack, sorry, seven times in the second half, three incompletes, a huge sack, a pass for negative 1 yard, one first down to Kevin Boss, and then that final Plaxico touchdown with 30 seconds left. But overall, that's pretty good defense.
Right.
When they big blitz with six, and I think they can continue to do that and get to Eli.
Well, this
even in the playoffs, he's improved in every other way except against the big blitz.
Well, it drives me crazy when we go into halftime of these games and the studio guys continue to forget that Belichick coaches the first half and the second half differently. That's what he does. He lets people do what they want to do in the first half to a degree, and then the second half, that's when he throws the kitchen sink at them. He doesn't waste it in the first half. And this is the way he's coached the entire time he's been with the Patriots. I'm always surprised that people never mention this.
Well, I will say, was it Phil Simms who in his book wrote that he doesn't believe in halftime adjustments? He doesn't believe that it's really an issue?
Right.
And I think that watching the Patriots, you definitely, you know, you come to think that there's no way that that's the case.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like he wants people to get comfortable doing certain things. And get them into it, and then all of a sudden he springs a different look at them. And like he goes into the game thinking, I'm going to do this for two quarters, third quarter I'll do this, then the fourth quarter I'll do this.
Yeah, I think it also is often that what the Patriots game is based on is that since they do everything well, they'll take away whatever it is you want to do and force you to do what you can't do well. And they don't know what you want to do until they've seen you try to do it for at least one quarter. And so I think that might be where the changes come at halftime, because at halftime now you know what the other team's strategy is. So now you can design particularly your defense to go against what the other team has decided they're going to try to do on offense.
Well, I won't even ask you to make the case for the Pats, because I think it's pretty obvious.
No, you don't. The case that has to be made, as far as I'm concerned, is the case for a blowout.
Yeah.
I think that the natural assumption here, the most likely scenario, is that the Patriots win by a comfortable but not large margin, 10 points maybe, 13, 7 perhaps. There is a small chance that the Giants win, and there is a small chance that the Patriots just blow them out of the water. People think, you know, I wrote the thing on ESPN last week about the Giants being perhaps the worst Super Bowl team of all time. I've taken a lot from Giants fans over the last couple weeks because of this.
Yeah, they're loud.
But I'm not saying they don't have a chance. The only thing dumber than picking the Giants in this game is saying they have no chance at all.
Yeah.
Okay, if you pick the Giants, it means you're either looking for attention or you actually believe they have a greater than 50% chance to win this game. That's ridiculous. But to say they have a 0% chance is also ridiculous.
I would say the chance
isn't big.
I would say there's a much bigger chance of the Patriots blowing them out over the Giants being in this game in the late fourth quarter with a chance to win. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if you had something like a backdoor cover or something like what was going on with Jacksonville, where they were never really out of it, but they weren't exactly in it at the end. And,
yeah.
I mean, the fact is that while the Patriots were getting blowouts in the first half of this season, historically that's just not really the way this team has played over the last few years. They don't tend to blow other teams out. They tend to kind of, you know, chew clock and keep it within, you know, 14 points or whatever. And that's why this is like the unlinable game. I mean, Vegas must be going nuts.
Hmm.
Because I would never take the Patriots plus more than 10 in this game. At this point, haven't they proven that when you make the spread that big, they don't cover it? And yet at the same time, how on earth could you take the Giants?
But there's one X factor here that you haven't mentioned yet and deserves to be mentioned is, are the Patriots a warm weather dome team that in cold weather ekes out these wins a different way, but you put them in the nice Arizona atmosphere, Randy Moss maybe feeling a little better about things. I mean, he's basically disappeared.
The reason why I don't think that's the case is that Arizona has that grass field that they roll in and out. So while it is a warm weather with the lighter air, which I think particularly for the kicking game is important, mm-hmm. it's not turf.
Right.
And so you don't have the, you know, faster on turf thing.
All right.
That's a big part of, I think, the dome mystique.
I just wonder if the Pats, especially Moss, God, it just seems like he's a different guy when the weather is nice out and somebody's not standing there hitting them every time he has
I agree. But I think he's done a good job of sort of buying into the Patriots program.
Yeah.
And it's pretty clear that near the end of the season they were forcing the ball to him to try to get the records. And it's pretty clear that teams have been playing in the playoffs as if the Patriots were going to still do that.
Yep.
And they have not. And if the Giants want to put two guys on Moss and rush five, they can't do both of those at the same time without leaving Wes Welker or Jabbar Gaffney wide open. And Welker had, 12 catches against them in the first game?
Yeah.
You also have to remember, the improved running game. The only game where Maroney has not had 100 yards over the last five is the Giants game. Partly that's that the Giants play good run defense. Partly it's because he was missing Stephen Neal, Kyle Brady, and Nick Kazier. Those guys are all back. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a lot of running and a lot of yardage running. The Patriots ran more draws than any other team in the league by our game charter's numbers. And while the Giants were very strong against runs up the middle, they were very poor against draws up the middle, which makes sense because they're a pass-rushing team. That's when you draw. You draw to take advantage of a pass rush. So the Patriots can get into that and run some draw plays up the middle and probably pick up some significant yardage that way.
I'm leaning toward a blowout. I really am. If I had to – I mean, it's Wednesday. We're taping this on Wednesday. My column doesn't go up till Friday. But if I had to pick right now, I think I'd pick the Pats by 20-plus because if they get the lead – and the Giants, it's going to be 80% Giants fans there. They're going to be so bummed out if the Giants fall behind and Eli makes one mistake. And it could be one of those things where it snowballs, And like we saw in the Minnesota game.
Yeah, that's sort of the historical memory of Super Bowls.
Yeah.
But the last few have not obviously been like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is a blowout. I think it's going to be a blowout that's closer to what we saw in 2002 with the Bucks and Raiders.
Yep.
Not one of those old school NFC dominant blowouts from the 80s. Because what happened was the Bucs took the big lead, and the Raiders just kept throwing and throwing. And Rich Gannon threw a lot of picks, but they did get a good number of points in the second half.
Yeah.
So the game was never – it's not like the Raiders just gave up. I think if there's a blowout here, you're going to see something more like that and less like, 46-3 or something.
Well, this could be the first really great NFL team in 10 years since the second Broncos team. I don't think any of the teams from the last decade I would have
– Oh, the 99 Rams. Despite their easy schedule, definitely they sit on the list of the greatest teams in NFL history.
Yeah, but you look at the Tampa game in the NFC Championship, then followed by the Titans Super Bowl.
Right, but remember, the 80s, this happens to every team. The 85 Bears, right, possibly the greatest team of all time. A lot of people argue that. I argue that, not counting this year's Patriots, since we don't know what the Super Bowl will give us. They played Tampa Bay within their division. 2-14 that year. And the Bears beat them by 8-10 in, these close, lame games.
Yeah.
It happens. Even the greatest teams of all time have to eke out close wins, even against bad opponents. It happens once or twice. That's why all that talk about the Patriots are vulnerable was so ridiculous earlier this year. The 72 Dolphins had to come back against Buffalo in, the final minute, and Buffalo was a 6-18 that year or something. It happens. So, with that in mind, I don't think that the fact that the 99 Rams had to play a close game or two when it came to the playoffs diminishes the fact that they were one of the greatest teams of all time. And so were the 2001 Rams until the Patriots pulled the upset. That's why it's, one of the great upsets in all of sports history.
All right, so I'm not totally sorry. I didn't like the 99 Rams as much as you. I felt like Tampa really could have beaten them in that game. And that, what was it, Bert Emanuel? What was the famous play?
Yeah, the Bert Emanuel not catch.
God, I remember I think I was wagering back then. I think I had Tampa plus 40 points or whatever the spread
with
was.
With Sean King? Isn't that one of your rules?
Yeah, well.
Don't put money on a team with Sean King at quarterback and then it's the championship game?
I don't know what I was thinking, but I really remember walking away from that game thinking that Tampa should have won. And then you look at what happened in the Titans game. Were they the Titans back then, or were they still?
Yeah, they were the Titans.
The first year
they were the Titans.
That was about as close of a Super Bowl game as we've ever had.
Yes. And good on the Titans for making it that way.
Yeah, where both teams actually played well and it was close. Sometimes you'll have ugly games, and I think the Pats-Rams game, as much as we loved it and as happy as it made us, was a pretty ugly game.
Yeah, that was part of the Patriots' strategy.
Yes.
As far as great teams, I think that there have been other great teams in the last decade, but you're right that this Patriots team, is just in a different class
yep.
than the previous Patriots teams or the 06 Colts or the 05 Steelers or the or even the 2002 Bucks, who had a kind of an okay offense to go with that great defense of theirs. And
yep.
that's the other thing people are forgetting when they're looking for historical equivalents for the Giants. The 03 Panthers may be a good historical equivalent, and they kept the Super Bowl to within 3 points. But this Patriots team is far beyond that Patriots team.
Yep.
And it's another reason why the 85 Patriots may be the best similarity, because they also had to go up against the juggernaut, and the juggernaut slaughtered them.
All right, last question. What happens to you after the Super Bowl? Do you just go back, you go back to some bunker, and you're just crunching Pro Football Prospectus numbers for your book for the
basically,
next like 6 months? That's
basically,
it? You're never seen again? Do you get daylight? Do you get to see
I got
daylight?
A big window in my office. It's very sunny today.
How, do you take like 2 weeks off between the end of the season and starting to write the book?
At some point, I'll probably take a week to just chill and do nothing.
Yeah.
Probably not the week after the Super Bowl, week after that. Then I go off to the Combine. I do a lot of research, working on improving our numbers, improving the projection systems, playing with some new things. We divvy out all the chapters for the book. We write the book. So there's certainly a lot to do. I just don't have the same kind of due dates. And the other thing is, when it comes to draft time, I literally push everybody off onto my other writers. Mm-hmm. I decided that I cannot possibly know everything. So since I don't follow college football at all, I leave the draft up to everybody else. When I get radio requests, I send them to my other writers. When I get requests for people to write articles, I send them to the other writers. And I just don't even concern myself with guys till they show up in the NFL.
When does that book come out? Mid-August?
Actually, we're hoping mid-July.
Mid-July? Interesting.
Yeah, we're always hoping. I mean, listen, the problem with that is that you're always going to miss a few things. There are always going to be moves that happen in late June while we're off at the printers.
Yep.
But they push that baby through a publication schedule that is just unreal compared to, you know, what most books go through, where there's months and months of editing. And we try to get that sucker in stores mid-July because we need it to people to use for their fantasy football drafts.
I think I should be in the running to replace Easterbrook as the blurb on the top of the book. Okay. After his relentless Pats bashing, I think you need to knock him off.
I will say about Easterbrook that this week that he makes a comment about the Patriots not getting any holding calls in the playoffs. Nobody's gotten holding calls in the playoffs. Out of the 12 teams in the playoffs, only 5 of them have been called for offensive holding, you know, not counting special teams or whatever. So, I mean, the Patriots are no different from Dallas or Washington or Tampa Bay or Green Bay or Indianapolis, and none of these teams got called for holding. They're not even called. They're just not calling holding.
Are you trying to torture the Steeler fans right now?
Wait, what'd you say?
Are you trying to torture the Steeler fans right now? They're getting flashbacks to the Garrard QB draw.
Well, listen, man, they're not calling it on anybody, whether that player is wearing a Jacksonville uniform or a Patriots uniform. They're just not calling it.
I think it's their new way. I think the defensive players have just gotten too strong and too fast, and they've all made this gentleman's agreement that you have to basically pull someone down.
Well, I mean, in the regular season there was holding, but in the playoffs, clearly, they've decided to take a let-em-play mentality. So.
Yeah.
And I do believe your blurb is going on the cover.
Oh, I need to work on it. That's what I'll do. After the Super Bowl, I need to maybe I'll go into a bunker for a week and just work on my blurb.
I don't know. You live in Los Angeles. Doesn't going into a bunker make less sense than it does for me
yes.
up here in the cold and snow?
Yeah, it's so hard to go into a bunker. Well, we probably won't have you on for a while because you just told me that you don't like the NFL draft or follow it. So we'll have to figure out some way to get you on during the spring. But
we'll point you to Mike Tanier. He can talk to you about the draft.
All right, cool. All right, enjoy the Super Bowl, and we'll talk to you in a couple months.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care. All right, for the last time this year, Cousin Sal from the Jimmy Kimmel Live Show is coming on. And, Sal, we've known each other for 5-6 years. This is when you go into the deep depression right here, the last week of Super Bowl week. This is when you really, really go into a tailspin. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, it's very sad, Bill. As you know, I've tried to focus, and, you know, I have my American Gladiators fantasy team, but it's not the same. It's just not the same, and we just have to get through this together. I don't know how we're going to do it.
It's such a dark month after this football season ends. It really is. I don't even know. You know, the NBA is so topsy-turvy this year. I don't even know what I'm looking forward to with that until the spring. College hoops, not really that exciting of a year. Baseball, not really good. I don't know what we do this month. I really don't.
Yeah, well, I don't know how excited I could get over Johan Santana 3 weeks from now, but maybe I'll maybe it'll keep up. It really did send a spark into me after seeing Tony Romo dancing with Jessica Simpson singing Don't Stop Believin' on stage.
I injected
a little energy into me with the Johan signing.
Congratulations on that, by the way. Anytime you can get Johan Santana for basically 40 cents on the dollar, I think you got to make that move.
You know, it's funny. I looked at it and I said, oh, excellent. The Red Sox or Yankees didn't get Johan. And I'm like, wait a minute. My team got Johan. This is great. I didn't even realize it, but I've been looking at stats. He's even a .258 lifetime hitter. There's nothing bad about it at all. I'm very excited.
He's a .258 lifetime hitter?
No, it's like 25 at-bats, but really, I'll take anything.
That's pretty good. Yeah, you guys haven't had a appointment TV starting pitching, I don't know, since Gooden?
Well, I looked back this morning. I said there are four Cy Young Award winners we signed over the year in free agency, and it was Viola, Saberhagen, Pedro, and Glavin, and they were all like 4 or 5 years removed from their last Cy Young Award. So this is really nice.
Nice.
Just what the doctor ordered.
Well, this could be a big week for you because I don't know if you have a controversial Super Bowl pick or what's up your sleeve, but the Santana trade followed by nailing the Super Bowl, I think that's a big week for you. That's a big bounce back from the Cowboys debacle.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to get it right this week, Bill. I really feel I am. I feel the 12 points. I mean, I haven't heard many people like the Patriots. Have you?
No.
You would think, if you listen to the FAN in New York for an hour, you would think the Giants won that Week 17 game by 40 points. I don't understand what they're so excited about. I mean, this is going to be a real long shot for them to pull it off.
Yeah, we had Aaron Schatz on from Football Outsiders, and he was saying it's ridiculous to say they have no chance, but the chances of them actually winning are pretty small, and you would not bet your life on it by any means. I mean, it's like what? What are they, 4-1 underdogs?
Yeah, right about 4-1. And I think, you know, you look at it, like everyone's excited about Eli. Eli threw 4 touchdown passes in that Week 17 game, and they still had a score at the very end to avoid being beaten by double digits. So
yeah.
I don't see how they're really going to do this. I really don't.
Well, the case to be made is they run the ball really well with the two guys. Eli doesn't make mistakes. They get one big play from Plax. They get a turnover. They're in the game in the end. The crowd gets into it. Mm-hmm. I personally don't see any of this happening.
No. And I made a fool of myself. I don't know. You probably don't have the soundbite, but going into that Week 17 game, I was on your podcast, and I said, listen, Coughlin should have all his starters playing. They're not going to go to Tampa Bay to beat the Bucs. They're not going to beat Dallas in Dallas. They're not going to go to Lambeau and beat Green Bay. This is their Super Bowl. They need to win Week 17, and it definitely did help them along the way, but I was wrong about all those other things.
I remember you saying that, and I remember thinking, I think I responded something about, wow, you're right. I mean, they really should try their starters. What else do they have to play for? And, 4 weeks later, here we are. But you have a lot of New York fan friends. A lot of Giants fans friends.
I grew up a Cowboys fan in New York, and Giants fans were as annoying to me as I was to them. So,
right.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you've heard them, right?
Well, who's more annoying, the Patriots fans or the Giants fans right now this week?
I have to say, because you know me, I haven't rooted for the Patriots. I've never rooted for them in a Super Bowl. I'm rooting for them this week because I just can't stand the Giant fans. Like, they didn't stand by Coughlin. They didn't stand by Eli after the debacle against Minnesota. It's like they don't deserve to win this. It's as if let's say the Celtics won the Eastern Conference after you wrote 25,000 words about how the Ray Allen trade was going to be a disaster. Like, you can't then celebrate with the Celtics, right?
I thought you were going to say after I've written 3 columns about how Doc Rivers has to be fired.
Oh, wait, I did.
Well, we don't have to worry about that because the Celtics aren't going to make the finals. But I think you're right. The funny thing about the Giants fans, especially with Eli, I mean, God, they have turned on him so many times. I almost feel like there has to be a disclaimer for them to enjoy a Super Bowl win if it happens, you know?
Yeah, right. And that's the thing. I hate when people are like, listen, it's all gravy after this. If we can go to Tampa and win, it's all gravy. And then, you know, it's all gravy if we win in Dallas, it's all gravy if we win in Green Bay. And now it's like they're hard-pressed to find a Giants fan that doesn't think they're going to beat the Patriots this week. I don't get it at all.
Hey, looking back at the playoffs, do you think those the Colts Chargers game and the Giants Packers game? It seemed like Vegas just won an obscene amount of money in those 2 weeks.
Yeah, they had to, right? With two underdogs winning in one day, where there's only two games, it's I would think so. We all had the Colts all over the place, right?
Right, we had the Colts, and also they were the last games, you know, of whatever big tees you would have made. Like the Colts were the last team that had to come in for the three-teamer in round two. And then in round three, if you teased the Pats and the Packers, you just needed the Packers to win. And, of course, they didn't. I just feel like Vegas probably made like $1 billion those two
weeks. I think so, too. And, you know, traditionally with the Super Bowl, if the favorite covers and the game goes over, then Vegas gets destroyed. But I don't know if that'll be the case this year. I mean, there's a lot of people who are taking the Giants to win the game, like, as you said, like almost 3.5 to 1 or something. And plus, everyone's taking the 12 points. I mean, I've heard people say, there's no way the Pats are going to cover 12. How could that? Like, really, the highest scoring team in the NFL, there's no chance that they're going to be up 7 driving in the fourth quarter late. There's just no chance of that, right?
Right.
I feel like people haven't watched football in the last 3 months. And if this game was played 10 times, the Giants would win once, maybe twice.
Well, also, it seems like people are discounting the weather. Like, the Patriots are a team that loves to throw the ball, and they've been playing cold weather now for 2 months, and it's had a dramatic impact on their win, you know, on the win totals they've had in those games. You look at them from week 1 to week 10, they were kicking butt. And then as soon as the weather turned, kind of they turned as well. And I don't know how much of that had to do with the hype from week to week and all the media coverage and the fact that teams are gunning for them. But you can't tell me that Randy Moss isn't better in cold weather than he is better in warm weather than he is in cold weather. He looks better.
Right, exactly. And if the Giants had any edge of momentum, which I don't think they did because the 2 weeks took it away, but Plaxburis, like, how many guys that actually can make a difference and then go out and say they're going to win the game? But I mean, they're going to clamp down on him like no one's business now. Like, even Joe Namath, who guaranteed victory, was only, I look back, he was like 17 for 28 with 202 yards with no touchdown passes. Like,
right.
If you have a chance to make a difference, you better just keep your mouth shut. I don't know. I don't get these guys opening their mouths so early in the week.
I think they just get bored.
Yeah.
I think after, especially with the 2 weeks, and Plax is coming out this game where he just destroyed Al Harris, he's probably feeling pretty confident. I have to say, he's the one guy who worries me on that Giants team, because the Patriots historically have had trouble covering tall guys. And I don't know. He worries me a little bit.
I agree, but I mean, he shouldn't make it like he's been lighting up this playoff season. You know,
no.
He had 38 receiving yards against Tampa and 5 yards against the Cowboys, and you know, it was spectacular last week against Green Bay or 2 weeks ago, whatever. But he's not the model of consistency, that's for sure.
How bitter are you that the Cowboys aren't involved on a scale of 1 to 10?
It just stinks. It's a 10. It really is every year.
Wow, a 10.
You know what? I figured it out. Like, I don't think we'll ever like our teams less than we do, right? Like, I'm always going to like the Cowboys and the Mets as much as I do, and you always like the Patriots and Red Sox and you know, what is it, Bruins?
No, Celtics.
Whatever,
yes.
As much as you will. But what does change is your hatred for other teams. And every year I hate the Giants more and more and more, and it just kills me this year that they're there. It really absolutely does.
Interesting, because I hate the Colts more and more every year, and I'm not sure why. I was so angry when they didn't show up for the AFC Championship game. It was totally irrational. I felt like they had ducked us, and I just lost my mind for like 5 days.
But this is supposed to get easier. We have more responsibilities. We have kids, and you know, we should focus on our jobs more and everything. But and yet, really, football and baseball take precedence over everything.
You know what? I'm going to throw this at you because I think you're onto something. I think people just get crabbier when they get older.
Yeah, that could be too.
And maybe like when you're 25, you're a little more carefree, you got your whole life. But by the time we're hitting our late 30s, we have kids, we have wives who hate us. And I just think you take it out on teams like the Giants and the Colts.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I can see that. You would say our friend Brad is getting crabbier?
I think he's always been crabby. Is he available? We have to call him one last time.
I don't know if he's around. I didn't think you were going to have him on this week.
No, I'm going to have him on. That's Joe. Can we call Brad?
Let's do it.
Brad, Brad's really been just unleashing personal attacks on me. And I they've been mostly confined to email, but I have to say, I don't appreciate it. I feel like I'm Damashek, where I'm just under attack.
He's a big Giants fan, and he knows the season's about to end soon. And he's, I think he's projecting a little bit.
Is he projecting? All right, let's see if he's ever calling the mysterious Brad. Let's hope he doesn't answer, actually. I'm rooting for him not to answer. This is great. I could say he ducked me if he doesn't answer, and he'll never be able to respond. Oh, this is excellent. All right, Joe, hang up. He didn't answer.
I can't believe it.
He wasn't man enough to answer. Wow. So afraid of the Patriots.
I'm always just happy to hear that his phone doesn't go straight to voicemail, because then I get worried. But, yeah.
It's probably, you're probably right. So what are your plans for Super Bowl Sunday?
Well, I'm going to be at Jimmy's. He's getting Bay Cities, and he's going to order sandwiches. But, you know, the Super Bowl is a real pain in the neck for me. I really, it's about all day. People want to bet through me, and I have to then explain, like, why they can't parlay Plaxico Burress and Ahmad Bradshaw to score the first touchdown. You know, it ends up being a real pain for me. But,
what do you think is the dumbest Super Bowl bet? Is it the margin by victory, or is it the bet on which guy scores first?
Well, they don't give you. Yeah, whenever they itemize the ones like which guy's going to score first, they're really hitting you over the head with it, because they take a lot of vig out of those numbers, but. Yeah, which guy scores first, which guy scores last, I would say those two are right up there.
I think the margin of victory is just inane. It's basically like you're taking whatever money you bet and just burning it. Like, you're going to bet, like, I think the Pats are going to win between 14 and 16 points. Like, how could you possibly think that?
Right, that's stupid, unless you take all the ones around that, too. It's like it ends up being roulette, and what, you know, it's a real crapshoot, or roulette shoot, whatever.
But I saw
this one doesn't make sense either. The number is 2.5, number of times they have to empty Tom Petty's colostomy bag during the halftime show.
I had to over.
You got to go over there, right? It's a long halftime.
Do you have the props in front of you or no?
I don't have them. I don't have them with me.
Man, we should have. I'm such an idiot. I should have gotten those. You know, the one I like the most is, I have to say, the Randy Moss, will he score a touchdown? It's probably like, what, -160 to win 100? Something like that?
Yeah, I think it is something like that, yeah.
I think that's the one I like the most. I think Randy does not go through the whole playoffs without catching a touchdown, especially with free agency coming up and warm weather. You get the Giants. I don't know who covers him. I feel like he comes away with something.
You know what? I'm going with 35-17 as a final in favor of your Patriots, but I think it's always worth it to take, like, the ones where you get the infinity bets, like Pats by 37 or more points, 15-1, and you know, that 78 or more points will be scored in the game, that's 15-1. It was 38-35 the first time, you know, and these Super Bowls tend to get a little more out of hand, but
yeah,
I think those could be worth it.
We've always enjoyed the infinity bets.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember, like, about 4 or 5 years ago, the odds were better, and they've lowered the odds because people were hitting those bets, because they used to be like, you know, 22-1, 25-1, and now they've brought them down, it seems like.
Right, exactly. Even Moss and Burris over 150 yards is, you know, if you take both of them, one of them will be able to have a big game, right? So.
What about, is there a bet you can make about Tom Coughlin's face turning different shades of red, like maroon, fuchsia, purple?
By the way, yeah, even in Glendale, that doesn't settle in at all. You can blame it on the weather only so much, but then you see him at media day. But what is with Belichick? I know you make fun of my coach, Wade Phillips, but what is that interview ESPN keeps showing where he's got that disgusting, glistening blister on his mouth? Have you seen that all week?
Yeah, the other Patriots fans have gotten together, and we've decided not to comment on that. Because we don't know what the hell it is, and we don't want it to distract from the Super Bowl in any way. But you're right. In HD, it did not help him out. Really?
I mean, there's a guy that just doesn't care. He really just doesn't, but he's going to have his fourth Super Bowl in a few days.
Last question. You're having a kid soon.
Yeah.
This is it. It's football season ends. You have a kid.
I know. Maybe that's why I'm more depressed than normal. But, you know, I wasn't kidding. Like, we really were going to – if it's a boy, which we think it is, we haven't checked, but some sonogram technician screwed up, so thanks for that. But we think it's a boy, and I was really going to go with Jack Romo as the name. But that video of him singing Don't Stop Believin', which, by the way, also reminds me of the ending of The Sopranos, which I hate too.
Right.
Just, I may have to go Johan with his middle name. I don't know.
So that now becomes your least favorite song maybe ever. And if Johan starts coming out to that to games, you'd really probably snap. That would be it.
Yeah, well, that'll have to know. Then it'll be like a Truman Show thing. Then I'm like, oh, they're definitely screwing with me now. So.
Do you think, is there any chance, like, if you had to put odds on this, Romo still even playing professional football in 4 years? 10-1?
Really? You think it's that bad?
Oh, no, I'm just saying. If I said right now, I want to put in 10-1 odds, I want to put $1,000 5 years from now that Romo will not be in the NFL, would you take that bet?
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah, why not? Are you sure?
I don't know if I want to make it. I just feel like he's filming an E! True Hollywood Story right now. We're at like the 30-minute mark, but I've never seen a guy do more to jinx himself.
Listen, he's a silly guy, and he's been serenading. Have you heard Jessica Simpson's voice? She could serenade John Wayne. You make him he'd become a complete sissy after a while. I'm telling you.
You know what's even weirder about it? Not only is he dating Jessica Simpson, but Ashley could be his sister-in-law, and Joe Simpson could be his father-in-law.
Yeah,
I don't see how you bounce back from that professionally.
Listen, I'm worried Joe Simpson is going to be the offensive coordinator of the Cowboys. That's the only thing I'm worried about, how much stock they put in this guy. But
I'm glad you brought that up. Congratulations on the triumphant return of Dave Campo. Has anybody ever been a head coach and then come back and coach the secondary for the same team? That's got to be a record.
No, I don't think they have. And they asked him. They said, "Listen, do you still have that SeaWorld outfit you wore on Hard Knocks?" And he said, "Yeah." And they're like, "All right, come back. We'll hire you back." But
I was trying to think what the equivalent of that would be, and I think it would be if Jimmy got fired from his show, and then he came back 4 years later as an associate producer.
Oh, interesting. You're right.
Yeah.
On the Man Show, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, the Man Show, that's right. Yeah, he gets fired, then he comes back, and he's working on the Man Show as like an AP. How do you come back to the same team that you were the head coach of? Like, do you have no pride?
I just think Wade Phillips looked around and said, let's see, who won't I have to look over my shoulder at if I hired him back? Dave Campo's definitely one.
Switzer? Yeah. Is Switzer available? Can we get him to do offensive line?
Switzer's around. Yeah, Rich Kotite might be there somewhere.
All right, so you're looking at 35-17 as your Super Bowl pick.
I think so. And you guys might run it up a little more, but I like the dry conditions. I like Brady. I don't think the Patriots are going to want to be known as a team that wins the Super Bowl by 3 points every year. Belichick's got to have a plan, and I think Burris sealed his deal, too, with opening his mouth. So those things are all good in your favor.
It's feeling pretty good. Well, congratulations on Johan. I think that's done a lot to really ease the pain of the last 14 months for you. 15 months?
I think 15 or 16 months, I was thinking, between the two teams, the two seasons.
Yeah, you've had one of the worst sports stretches ever with the double Mets season collapse and then the Romo and then the Giants game a couple weeks ago. So.
All right. I know.
No, this is good. You have Johan Santana. He's appointment TV. You get to watch him every 5 days. I'm happy for you.
It's very exciting. 258, lifetime hitter.
All right, we'll talk to you. You're coming back on during baseball season, so we'll talk to you.
Let's try to keep in touch in the off season.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, good luck with everything.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.